What I've been told is that there was another deal where they were taking on some of the money that was vetoed by John Henry. And the reason it was vetoed is because they had to take on money.
Fire today. This is Hot Sheet. Scott Brun, JJ Cooper, and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America. Get yourself a Baseball America subscription. This is maybe the best time of year. Draft is on the way. But for today, we are focusing primarily on one topic and the many layers around it, and that is the Rafael Devers trade, moving on from the Red Sox to the San Francisco Giants. Let's dig in with our first move. Jeff, you're our Boston guy. Thoughts on this one? I mean, the Red Sox just cannot get out of the way of the headlines in Major League Baseball, and you would think this team's either terrible or amazing. They're kind of mid.
Yeah, they're kind of mediocre, which honestly, I think to the fan base, especially in the hours following that sweep of the Yankees, I think there was some positivity among like Red Sox Nation, if you want to call it that, for the first time in quite a while. The kids are up. Things seem to be going well. Obviously, you know, you take three at home in mid-June. Things change quickly in baseball too. I mean, we see a lot of teams that have losing records in June that make the playoffs and make deep runs. So, you know, I think this fan base at this point wasn't expecting a championship this year as much as they were expecting someone to compete, to contend, and, you know, stick it through until the end of the season, or at least until the trade deadline, and sort of reassess at that point. So I think just the temperature check of this is, you know, it's hot, and it's as hot as it's probably been since Mookie Betts was traded. I mean, just one aside here, but I wrote up our trade breakdown of the Devers deal last night, and I put my phone to the side and just try to ignore it so I can focus and get my work done. Obviously, with a story like this, we want to get it up on the website as quick as possible. When I went back to my phone after finishing, I had over 70 missed text messages, and they weren't from contacts or people within the game that wanted to talk about the deal. It was Red Sox fans, people, you know, that I coach with in Little League Baseball and just know from the neighborhood that are like, hey, who are these guys and what the heck just happened? And I think that's continued to settle in over the last 24 hours for people here.
I just want to kind of the thing that jumps out to me about this that's kind of difficult about it is if you look at it as a pure baseball trade, I can make a case for it. Right, which is Rafael Devers was signed by a previous administration in Boston and long-term contract, a lot of years, doesn't have a lot of defensive value. Okay, but the problem with this is that trades aren't just about, you know, from a baseball trade, you could say that the Red Sox may not lose this trade. It's hard to see them winning it. They traded the best player in the trade. The return that they got, which we'll get into more, is not overwhelming by any stretch of imagination. But the thing that Jeff just lined up, you know, this is a team that if you're a Red Sox fan, you're not ready right now to be kind of in the situation of saying, well, wait till next year or the year after that. Because that's kind of what you've been hearing for more years than you ever want to as a Red Sox fan. Because this is an organization that the fan base expects that they will be good year after year after year. And it's been quite a while since they've been very good. And from that standpoint, on the heels of Mookie Betts, on the heels of Chris Sale, on the heels of, we could just keep going back and back. The thing that just jumps out to me is if you're a 15-year-old Red Sox fan, you know, you're in that prime spot of like that baseball fandom where it's never more intense than that. Even if you become a baseball fan for life, every player that you essentially grabbed onto as a kid, as you're watching this team, they're all gone now, and they've all kind of largely left in less than ideal circumstances. They've all left in situations where they've been many times traded for kind of, you know, fractions of a dollar for a dollar. The Sale trade, the Betts trade. Now here, that's going to be hard for a fan base. Even if this is a wash, like as far as a baseball trade, I think that the other effects of this trade may be more significant.
And I think the thing is, as you brought up, I can understand this trade from a baseball econ standpoint. I can look at it and I can say, yes, Devers' contract, for the type of player that he is, the limitations that you have, you know, plus, and this is stuff that was said on the main show at Foul Territory, you know, when Chris came on, like, you know, you kind of go against the recommendations of the owner, and I'm probably using recommendations with quotation marks, of, you know, help us out here, do this, and you're not willing to do that, and he's signing your checks and paying that amount of money. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth of, you know, the front office for sure, the ownership, and I think eventually, you know, he probably lost Cora with some of this stuff. And, you know, when all that stuff, you know, came to happen, I just think eventually the Red Sox decided that it was too much. Now, I think you can also look at it from the other standpoint of the things that happened that preceded it this offseason, the signing of Alex Bregman. You can also look at it and say, you know, what was the level of communication to Rafael Devers about a decision that would impact his future and his role with the team? I know we want to think that these guys are just robots and they're just going to take it. Hey, I'm getting paid all this money, I'm going to shut up and take it. There might be some players that approach it that way. These guys still have egos. They're still professionals. They still have a lot of pride in what they do. And if he spends time in the offseason trying to improve his defense, I don't know if that's the case or not. I would assume he probably took some reps. That's got to be frustrating as well. And I think when you then push him out to a position, hey, you're our DH, struggles with initially, buys into it. He's been having a phenomenal season since, hit his 15th home run yesterday. I think in terms of approach and some of the swing and miss stuff, this is about the best version. This is the peak version of Devers that we're currently witnessing. And, you know, to then go to him and say, hey, now we need you to play first base because the team needs it. I understand it once again from, yeah, you should do anything you can for the team. It's a lot of mixed signals for a guy that, you know, coming into the year just had, I think, a very different expectation. Could he have handled it better? 100%. But I think there's some people management stuff that's been missing a little bit with the Red Sox. And I think that bleeds into how their relationship with their fan base over the last couple of years. You know, I think interest here is dwindling. I think with this Devers trade, it's going to some of that frustration from fans is only going to boil over. And if there's still potential for a trade of Jaron Duran, who's another fan favorite. And if that happens, I think this could really blow over this season for him. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's ownership. It's what the team does on the field that matters to the front office. They don't probably really care about the fans' input that much. But this is a business and it's an entertainment product. And I think at the end of the day, when you're charging the prices they charge and you're not putting an entertaining product on the field, that's an issue.
So let's dive into this a little bit as far as what they got back. So Kyle Harrison is no longer a prospect, although he's yet to be a fully established big league pitcher. He was a top 100 prospect for us. So that's a key part of the return. Jordan Hicks, I would say we can comfortably say, is the salary dump portion of this. You're going to take some salary on and as the Giants take on all of Devers' contract. But Jeff, how would you line up the two prospects that the Red Sox got in return, James Tibbs and Jose Bayo, and where would they slot if we, you know, when we next update our Red Sox top 30?
Sure. And since we last updated, we did have a graduation in Hunter Dobbins. So that moves the list a little bit. I think he still sort of falls in front of Mikey Romero. Falls in front of Mikey Romero. And right behind where Richard Fitz is, I think Fitz is just a low risk sort of low end number five, which is what a 45 low would be. And so him being a 50 high in that Giants system, he ranked very high in that Giants system, which is fairly thin. You can talk to Josh Norris about that. He's certainly at a stellar points in time. But I think when you look at Tibbs, there's a lot of reasons why the Red Sox would like this player. You know, they're big on expected outcomes. And, you know, when you talk to a lot of Red Sox analysts, something that consistently comes up is, you know, ex-WOBA. This is a guy who had a 388 ex-WOBA. He's, you know, more or less performing exactly in line with what his WOBA is at this point in time. 18% chase rate. The barrel rate was about 17%. 90.6 mile per hour average exit velocity. So all the underlying data stuff is there. And it certainly falls in line with the type of hitters the Red Sox like. And I can say with some certainty that this was a player they were interested last year in the draft when they ended up taking Brady Montgomery. So they get a player that they liked. You know, I think there's maybe some limitations in terms of what the profile is like. He's fine in a corner, but not a super athlete. And I think it's the type of profile where Tibbs really needs to hit. Now, I think the exciting part of him is coming into a Red Sox system that's had a lot of success with players that they've targeted in the draft or internationally or just within their organization with their hitting development. We've talked about it, spent some time writing some articles, done some shows about it. So I do think that is an exciting element of this, just purely from evaluating the player. What will James Tibbs be in 6 months to a year under that Red Sox, you know, hitting player development tutelage that they've had over the last couple of years? And then as for Bayo, it's an interesting arm. We actually have gotten some pretty good reports on him. Probably doesn't crack the Red Sox top 30 at this point in time. That's certainly subject to change over the next month as we get more information. But you know, fastball sat 93 to 95 miles an hour, touches 96, 97 at peak. Kind of a weird sinker cutter kind of shape. It's a really unusual sort of cut four seam fastball, and mixes in a harder curveball in the mid 80s. It's kind of a slurvy sort of breaking ball. Shows a changeup. He's only thrown it a couple of times, so I don't have a ton of data on that pitch. So like a projection arm, an interesting sort of fourth piece in the deal, but not a player that's going to crack a very loaded Red Sox top 30 right now.
I just want to put a little context on that. So that would put Tibbs in kind of that 12, 13 range on the 30.
Yeah, I think he's just outside of the top 10 right now.
So a good prospect in the system, and it's a very heavy, very loaded top of that system. But at the same time, you know, it is also worth noting that that's not they're adding not a non-top 100 prospect. It was a first round pick, but a non-top 100 prospect who's not going to crack their top 10 right now for us.
If you have a question on what we're addressing here, let us know now. I'm letting you know halfway through the show, and we'll try to get to one or two of them. I want to continue this discussion on the youth movement for the Red Sox, if they exhausted all options on this trade, and we'll do that when we come back. It is summertime. We are in the thick of golf season. It's always golf season down in Florida, but we're in the thick of golf season across the country, and if someone's looking to get a new club, that logo should say it all. PXG, what do they do?
Go get fitted. Mm-hmm. Go get fitted by one of their master fitters, professional fitters. I've done it. It's helped shave many strokes off my handicap. It is worth it. It's educational. You learn about not only clubs, you learn about shafts, you learn about grips, you learn about angles. They have all the numbers, all the setups that you need to help improve your handicap.
You feel like a VIP when you're there.
100%. They even help my putting, which needed help.
Mm-hmm. There. They help your putting there.
There.
That's how cool it is. So schedule your fitting today, and for a limited time, you could save up to 20% on your entire order. Head over to pxg.com/foul. That's pxg.com/foul to save up to 20% on your entire order. pxg.com/FOUL. Restrictions apply. See site for details. We're back. I'm going to read this one from Jeff Ponce. Great little quote graphic board on socials. This seems like a clear sign of two organizations headed in different directions. The Giants are loading up to compete with the juggernaut Dodgers, while the Red Sox are in talent acquisition mode. And I think people feel duped, Jeff, because the Red Sox were a sexy pick from some people to do some damage in the division as a wild card contender, maybe make noise in the playoffs. They get someone like Crochet. I know Buehler hasn't been great, but he's very playoff battle tested if he gets himself together. I mean, he wasn't good at all for the Dodgers until the playoffs for the most part last year. But anyway, the part that bothers me, and I spoke about this a lot on Foul Territory, is the fact that you make a deal like this mid-season. As long as Devers is healthy and he's hitting well, this could have been done in the offseason. You would have had the Giants interested. You probably would have had more teams interested. You wouldn't have been as concerned about rumors swirling around and having it affect your team, because apparently there were some other teams that didn't even know he was available. So does that part bother you? And do you think that they got the best deal possible, or were they potentially trying to offload the entire contract and that lessens the return?
Yeah. So I guess the conversation we have to have is unloading that contract to them in their eyes. is that the best deal possible? Because I think it was. And, you know, what I've been told is that there was another deal where they were taking on some of the money. I do not know what pieces were included within that particular deal. That was vetoed by John Henry. And the reason it was vetoed is because they had to take on money. Now, I don't know if they ended up taking back Hicks in return and were like, hey, it's 12.5. At least this guy can maybe be a ground ball guy for multiple innings out of, you know, the bullpen and can maybe fill in when he, you know, comes back from, you know, his stint on the IL and, you know, potentially be a rotation fill in for us or a guy that we can use for, you know, as a bulk starter, three or four innings behind an opener. I think that's all possible. And I agree. I think, you know, when you look at this team, you do see the Crochet move, you see the Bregman move. They've had some bad luck, frankly. Tristan Cassis and that injury, obviously there's some bad luck there. Bregman's injury, I think there's some bad luck there. This, you know, just how long it's taken for Cutter Crawford to kind of come back and be fully healthy on the mound. I think there was something that you could sell to this fan base in terms of we're making an effort, we're building, we have this young nucleus core that's coming up, plus a whole bunch of other really good prospects, including a lot of pitchers that are going to be coming up over the next year. We have all the assets that we need to continue to build this thing up into, you know, the juggernaut that we sort of should be. And they've taken a pass on that. And I think that's the part that kind of just doesn't sit right with me. It's the feel part of it in terms of you sweep the Yankees at home. And then a few hours later, before you even board the plane to go to Seattle, you know, your ship endeavors out of town. I think a lot of teams didn't know, kind of answering that part of it, because I think they kind of look at it like a fantasy owner, right? So you're in a fantasy league. There's certain owners that you're not even going to probably like approach regarding like a particular trade because you know it's going to be a waste of time. And I think that's what the situation they were in with Devers too. There's a bunch of years still on this contract. There's still, 8 years after this on this contract. That eliminates all the small market teams. The amount of big market teams that now have a model that value contracts and player value per dollar, all those teams are probably going to be out on Devers and you're not going to get the kind of deal you're going to get. It probably had to be somebody like Toronto or the Giants who have struggled to sign free agents in the open market, regardless of how much money they've thrown at them. And they weren't going to trade them within the division. They weren't going to trade them within the AL. So I think it kind of left them really limited in terms of the number of suitors who could give them a reasonable deal and a reasonable return for what that contract is without having to eat $50, $60 million, which I think might have made a difference if they wanted to buy prospects or buy another asset.
I just wanted to kind of add, I do want to swing this the other way for a minute, which is from the Giants standpoint, yes, they took on the whole contract here, but if I'm a Giants fan, I'm thrilled by this because one, I added the best player in the trade. Always, you're rarely going to do poorly by adding a very quality player in a trade, right? And two, the worst that happens is that at some point this contract goes underwater, which is not great necessarily for the Giants' bottom line. But if you're a fan, that's much better as a bad outcome than losing a top player, than not having as much talent. This is a team that's 10 games above 500 right now, I would say, has been kind of one of the more impressive stories of the first half of the season in the National League. The Buster Posey, Zach Manassian group, they have had a very strong start to the season, and here now they've doubled down on it, and they did so in a trade that really doesn't give up anything from the big league club that's really going to hurt them this year. So it's hard not to like it from that standpoint. I get it that, again, if you said, could this be a trade that they come to regret in 2030, 31, 32? Maybe. Yeah. But if I'm a Giants fan, that's a long way in the future. And what you just did here, the Giants have had a little bit of trouble. Willie Adames did, but they've had trouble getting free agents to kind of take free agent hitters to take their money. They just added a big middle of the order bat here. And by the way, they kind of start with a clean slate with him as well. When Jeff talked about all the problems that the Red Sox administration has had with Devers, the Giants kind of start fresh on that, where it wouldn't shock me at all if we kind of see Devers playing more positions in San Francisco than he was willing to do in Boston.
Oh, and he's totally going to
get back at Boston with that and be like, look, Buster Posey communicated with me properly, and now I'm playing a decent first base, for example. I want to ask you one question about the Giants farm system, and then we'll get to the Red Sox farm system in our third segment here. We'll swing right back. We'll do one more quick break, and then I want to get Bryce Eldridge's name into the mix for the San Francisco side. It might be that time. If you're looking for a new car, there's one place to go that is going to take care of you, and it's Car Gurus.
Yeah. Looking for a car should be fun, not exhausting. Everywhere else, it's exhausting. You're dodging people. You're trying to just, oh, can I look at this car? Car Gurus, you type in your search, you find the color that you want, it narrows it down for you, and all of a sudden you're like, this has been an exciting experience, and you got a great deal.
With over 4 million listings, Car Gurus has more car listings than any other major online automotive marketplace in the U.S., so you can find the best deal. It's no wonder SimilarWeb estimated traffic data shows Car Gurus is the number one most visited car shopping site. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Gurus at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. CarGurus.com. Okay, we're back. Let's talk Giants Farm for a moment. JJ, I want to say 85% chance during the conversation about Devers, Craig Breslow would have to be stupid not to at least say, hey, Bryce Eldridge involved in the mix. And then the Giants should go, no thanks. We're good. We're going to hold on to him. So good for them on keeping him, right? You're not at a deadline right now. There's a month to spare. So the Giants could have been like, okay, cool. You deal with that. See how many other teams are taking the full contract during the season right now. And how do you see the short term and the long term working out for San Francisco? I know you started to hint at Devers might get some action again in the field. So could he is not a good defender. Obviously, they have Matt Chapman at third anyway, so that's not really a question once Chapman's back. I don't know if you even want him to play third for, I don't know, a couple weeks. Do you try and get Devers to work out at first base, and then eventually Eldridge comes into play, and maybe they both play a little first in DH? Like, what would you do here? Because Eldridge isn't quite ready, but he's getting close.
Eldridge isn't quite ready, but at the same time, I think that Eldridge's bat may be ready a little bit before his glove. I know that sounds strange to say for a first baseman, but he's not a great defender right now from our reports. And I would say just a little bit of reliability. I think, again, adding that versatility, like if you could have a time machine here, right, and you could have figured out a way to do this right with Rafael Devers, to have solved this problem in December, January, February, how different would this look right now if the Red Sox could have worked out a way to convince Rafael Devers to start working at first base, right? Because this would kind of not be a problem right now where it'd be like, hey, Costas is out. Rafael Devers is our primary first baseman. Let's roll. I think if you're the Giants, getting him to be an option there just adds to your versatility where, okay, if Chapman's down, he's not a great defender at third, but you could play him there a little bit, play him at first. You know, again, having multiple positions where he can play and not just locking him in as a full-time DH is, I think, both good as far as your resilience of your team, be able to withstand injuries. But on top of that, also kind of helps you stay a little bit as an athlete, as a player. There are players who could make DH work as kind of that's their only position. A lot of guys struggle with that because it does kind of pigeonhole you and kind of take away a little bit of athleticism if you're just a pure DH, kind of the same way that we see pitchers lose some of their athlete if they don't focus on kind of keeping their athleticism going.
Okay, I want to get to two questions from fans in the live chat, and you can do this anytime if you join us live. Yard Ape, do you think the Red Sox signed the young core up, Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, etc., with the Devers contract off the books? And how many would they sign, Jeff?
Maybe Meyer is an option. I think that there's been conversations about an Anthony extension for quite a while. And I think I can't say this for certain. This is conjecture on my part. But I think there's a chance that Anthony probably would have been up and broke camp with the team if he was willing to take an extension a la Christian Campbell. So I don't think, from everything I've ever heard, I don't think there's any intent from Anthony's camp to sign an extension. So I don't think that would happen. it's possible. I certainly think they're going to sell, that they're going to reinvest this money in other places. And that's going to be one of the big positive takeaways from this deal and get, you know, offloading that contract. But I can't say for certain that either of those guys will sign. I think the Red Sox will certainly attempt it, and they might make another approach now. I don't know if the dollars would go up a little bit, but they might wait for some of that performance to catch up too.
One thing that stands out to me, Jeff mentioned the possibility of a Jaren Duran trade. And, you know, obviously there has been some speculation on that. The fascinating thing to me for the Red Sox to do now, and I'm just saying that this would be fascinating and kind of would maybe flip this narrative a little bit, is if they now went like, okay, yeah, we're not selling. We traded away a top player, but now we're adding. Because if you look at this from a baseball perspective, they did trade away someone who kind of clears out like a logjam for them because he was defensively limited. This is a team that could use another, you know, they acquired Crochet, but could use another front of the rotation starter. They could probably use another bat. Like if you said, hey, our solution at first base is we're going to go out and get somebody. If they did something like that, and this is the team that has the farm system to do this, that might start to, okay, because as Scott made the point, this is a team that's supposed to be contending this year, and they are above 500 right now. If they just say we're folding and we're turning, you know, we're kind of going to go with the young guys and turn to 26 and beyond, I think that's going to be a really tough sell. But if they said that they're going to kind of reinvest this money that they freed up, not just in extensions potentially, but in acquiring talent from other teams before the deadline, that could change this a little bit, because maybe then they could actually fill some of the holes that they also have in this lineup, in this rotation. And then it's a little bit different than just they're selling away.
I'm with you. Difficult to do during the season. That's why for me, if you do that in the offseason, you can quickly pivot and direct attention elsewhere. During the season is tricky. We'll see, right? Let me get to one more question for you on a different topic. Marty saying, thoughts on Aiden Miller, who's a highly rated Phillies prospect. Seems like he's a trade chip given how Dave Dombrowski operates. Is he a legit shortstop? I thought a move to third seemed likely, but I'm hearing his glove is okay at shortstop. JJ, this seems like a guy that the Phillies are going to want to keep and that Dombrowski will look elsewhere to pull off deals that are likely for relievers.
Yeah, I mean, I would, it's Dave Dombrowski. I would not put anything past him if the right player is available. Dave Dombrowski is not a prospect hugger. He will be, hey, it's going to help me win a World Series, anyone is be available to be traded. To answer the other part of that question, I would say Miller could play short, but he's one of those guys who, I best of the way I would describe it is you're probably going to have someone better than him. He's probably going to fit better at third base for that reason. If you want an average or maybe even a slightly above average defender at short, he could probably do that. You're probably going to have someone. You're probably hoping that you have someone better than that. So I'd say him more as a fit at third base. And I do think that he could fit long-term for the Phillies at third base. You know, that's, I think, a position where he would fit very well to kind of add a little bit of youth to a very good lineup, but one that is getting a little bit older, is getting a little bit long in the tooth. That would be useful from that standpoint. But at the same time, I'm not going to put anything. I don't think there's any prospect out there that you're like, oh, Dave Dombrowski would never trade him. Dave Dombrowski will trade to try to win a ring.
It's true. And the window is closing. Those Phillies players are getting up there in age. It's true. It's just the law of science here and the aging curve. Some of those guys will age okay, and some of them won't. And they're well aware of that. They spoke about that before the season started. They have serious bullpen fixing to do. We'll see if they pull that off. Anyway, this was great. Hope everyone enjoyed this. Obviously, the huge, huge news that we do not get often in mid-June, and a superstar like this being traded. This was a perfect storm for us to cover. We'll get to everything else like we usually do next week. We'll talk College World Series and the draft coming up. And, of course, always taking your questions if you're with us live. Thanks for watching Hot Sheet or listening later on. We'll catch you for the next one.